Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, if you're listening to this, I will assume you're at least interested in money, understanding the economy, and finances as well. And some of us now want to get the next generation interested as well. So check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. Tune into Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Get 1 month free and an extra $10 when you sign up for a Greenlight account at greenlight.com/million.
It's because I had a Mexi Coke earlier.
Aha.
I'm on my game.
Drew, what time's it? Oh, there we go. I was just going to say what time's the 3:30 podcast roll start, and there he is.
You doubted him.
I did for like a second.
You doubted him.
Oh, my bad. Hey, everybody, Kai Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. It is Thursday, I think. Yes. Trying to make today make sense as best we can is the tagline.
That's right. Sometimes we call this hollowed out shell Thursday because the weeks are long. Today is also, just so you know, we are not yet aware of whatever train wreck is about to unfold in the next couple of hours.
Yeah, good point.
Because
good point.
We're taping this before the final presidential debate of this election season, which is kind of a bummer because we're not going to have any of the good hashtags that are happening on Twitter, maybe as you're listening to this right now. But we will do our best, nevertheless.
You going to watch?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
But first, I'm going on a Costco date.
Oh, are you? Oh,
I'm totally dreading it, and so I'm prefacing it with a Costco date to get more tequila and be in a happy mood.
a Costco-sized jug of tequila. Well, the podcast episode has its title now. Okay, so
we will
do some news, then we'll do a little Make Me Smile, and then we will let you get on with your day, whatever and however much of that may remain. What do you got?
I have two things.
Shocking. Shocking.
I know. I almost had four things. I sort of like couldn't stop. I just had this whole like collection of bits and bobs open in tabs. And I was like, but I want them all. So I have narrowed them down to first, the story that I actually kept waiting all day to discover was from The Onion, which is the story about a Dutch ethical hacker, security researcher who claims that he hacked President Trump's Twitter account earlier in the month.
I saw this. Craziness.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
By guessing.
Yeah.
No computers were even involved here.
Yep.
By evidently guessing that his password was MAGA2020! Exclamation point.
I know. And it was like the fifth
it's
guess.
It's the symbol.
I mean, he didn't even go that far down the chain. I know.
Yep. It was reported in a Dutch newspaper. It has yet to be independently confirmed, and obviously the White House and actually Twitter have both vigorously, quote, according to The Verge, vigorously denied the claim. This ethical hacker said that he and two other hackers had actually breached his account in 2016, and then they decided to run a new security test in 2020 by plugging in the old password, which they said was, "You're fired."
No, stop it. Really?
I mean, this is literally why all day long, I was like, this has to be the Dutch version of The Onion. It is as yet unclear whether this is true or not. All I can say is that I freaking pray that this is not true. Because if Twitter doesn't have, what the story said is that this hacker discovered that there was no two-factor authentication.
That can't be.
Which I would find astonishing,
he could start like a nuclear war with his Twitter account. He could crash the stock market, and it has. I mean, come on.
All right,
it's still pretty good.
I mean, if true, it is an absolutely galling terrifying and horrific failure of security at every single level. Also hilarious. I'm sorry. What do you want from me? MAGA 2020 exclamation point. Like
password 123.
I just, it's just really boomer is all I'm saying. Very believable.
Okay, boomer. So we wait for verification, but it is not outside the realm of credulity here.
Yeah, it sadly is not. Right. And then my second thing, I'm just going to say quickly, because like last week, Elon Musk, God help us, tweeted that, you know, would the prophecy has come true and I'm going to drop the price of the Model S to $69,420.
And I was like, Elon Musk, I'm so funny. I make sex jokes and pot jokes in the same price tag. Dork.
Like over and over and over. And a woman I follow on Twitter actually was like, just imagine thinking that this same joke is funny over like for 2 years. It's the same joke you made when he said he was going to take the stock private.
Or whatever he is. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And I composed and deleted like 10 versions of a tweet that was like, if I were a Tesla investor, I'd be like, God, I wish this guy wanted to sell cars to women instead of just like bros who think that is hilarious. And the fact that he named his cars SEX, like I was like, And then Tesla had earnings and I couldn't help but note that apparently Tesla still doesn't make any money on its cars at all. But investors don't care because it makes all its money selling credits, selling regulatory credits to other car makers who aren't manufacturing enough green cars to meet federal standards. And those are sold at a 100% profit margin. And that's the one thing that's making Tesla profitable right now. And I was like, oh, maybe ladies aren't buying Teslas. Boom.
One would imagine that at some point he's going to, but I guess he gets more credits for every car that he does sell, right? So as long as he's selling some cars, he gets some credits, and then he can mark them up and sell them because, right?
I think so, yes. I believe that is the case. And, you know, there's speculation that that gravy train could go away if Trump is reelected because those credits, I think many of which are issued by the state of California, would disappear. But also, like, at some point, you got to make money on your product, I would think.
Right. And look, he is just a kooky person, let us just say charitably. But you want him to succeed in his ventures, right? I want him to be able to take humanity to Mars. I want him to make an electric car that everybody's going to want to drive. I want the stupid tunnel boring machine to work. I don't want that flamethrower idea he had to work. But all the rest of it, I want it to work.
Okay.
Okay, so mine is sort of keyed off the news that the virus is spreading uncontrollably in something like 48 of the 50 states in this union, maybe 47 or something. Like Maine and Vermont are green and everybody else is yellow or red, and it's just very bad news. And of course, some state governors in red states were saying, no, we're not going to lock it down. We can't do that because we'll kill the economy. Well, lo and behold, comes an article in the New York Times by Jim Tankersley, one of their economics reporters, and Ben Castleman, one of their data reporters, which says, in relevant part, I will quote it here, a growing body of research has concluded that the steep drop in economic activity last spring was primarily a result of individual decisions by consumers and businesses rather than legal mandates. That is to say, the economy cratered because everybody was scared, not because there were government-enforced lockdowns, right? So let's be clear here. Don't go shopping because it's scary out there. And when people say, look, we're not going to lock it down, that's not really the relevant part. The relevant part is consumer behavior. That's it. That's what I got. It's really annoying. It's really annoying, you know?
And the more that this thing spreads because there aren't mask mandates in most of these states, if any, and things are still open, meaning that at least some people are going and they're getting sick, the more consumer behavior is going to change.
Yep.
Which is why everybody thinks, which is why, full stop, the virus is the economy.
Right.
Now we're going to get like one of those annoying emails about how we say full stop. Don't care. Not going to read it.
We're not having it right now. Stop it.
I'm not having it. It's hollowed out shell Thursday. Don't at me, bro. I'm going to have my hands full with Tesla already. Good idea.
Oh, here we go. Drew Jostad jumping into the breach.
For the save.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So I am of an age where when I was growing up, Kiss, the band, the guys with the 9-inch heels and mm-hmm. Gene Simmons mm-hmm. with the this and the makeup and the eye and the hair and the whole deal. They were like big, right? Late 70s, early 80s. Kiss was huge, right? We're going to rock and roll mm-hmm. all night, all that stuff. So an article in the Wall Street Journal today caught my eye. Gene Simmons is kissing his L.A. mansion goodbye. Get it? Kissing? Anyway. Okay. So he's got this $22 million mansion he's going to sell. It's Italianate, ornate, blah, blah, blah. But I was scrolling through and, you know, just killing some time between the radio show and the podcast. And there's a description of this place. He's selling it because he's moving to Washington because the California tax burden is apparently too high for him and his money. So here's what it says in descriptions. Mr. Simmons has reserved three rooms for his extensive collection of Kiss memorabilia, fair enough, which includes framed discs, early album concept art, guitars, figurines, and pinball machines. One of the rooms, and this is the part I love, is entirely dedicated to merchandise from a collaboration between Kiss and the brand Hello Kitty.
Oh, yeah.
I just love that. And that's all I got. That's what I got. I was like, oh, okay. We're
I'm looking one up because I remember them, and they were so funny. Yep. It's so cute. They have the little star eye. That is amazing.
Oh, they do. Oh, my goodness. Look at this.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah, they're fantastic.
Oh, it's horrifying. There's a nightmare coming out of
this. No, come on.
It's
so cute.
No. And look, the Gene Simmons one has the tongue sticking out.
I know. They're so funny. There's like figurines and everything.
Wow. I had no idea this existed. Had no
idea. Wait, rich people are not kidding when it comes to their tax burden either.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes.
Not to buzzkill us, but 50 Cent? Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna move straight on from that. But yes. Do you remember when we got the answer to the Make Me Smart question where that lovely woman wrote in and she said that she thought that the song said, I want to rock and roll all night
yeah,
and part
I'd
of every
that.
Day?
Yes, I'd forgotten that. Yes, and for sure.
She's like, it's so practical. It's part of every day. My Make Me Smile is in the form of listener feedback, my favorite thing ever. And on your show, actually, we talked about the Google antitrust case.
Yes, we did.
And I said Google's response to this antitrust case was like, oh, come on, there's tons of choices. People could use all kinds of search engines. And I said, you know, for example, they pointed to Bing. And do you know anyone who uses Bing? Well, I got one email, by God, from John Beer, who says, I'm a fan of your work on Marketplace. Thanks for your info on the Google antitrust lawsuit today. But I took it personal when you asked if anyone uses Bing, because I do at work and on my phone. At my work desktop, I love the beautiful landscape photos and how I can get info about those amazing locales. No need to respond if you don't want to, but just want to let you know you have another fan and hopefully to make you chuckle or even guffaw.
John, and John, that's awesome.
I did. And then I went to Bing.com and I was like, oh, those really are pretty pictures. And look, they have all this info about them.
Oh.
Maybe I'll try it. Maybe I'll be a convert. Anyway, John is the one guy who wrote in to say.
Way to go, John.
I use Bing. Oh, look, it's a murmuration of sparrows. This is on the Bing website. Starlings. Yeah.
Does it tell you it's a murmuration? Because that's a pretty good one to pull out.
No,
of your...
I'm just kind of obsessed with that word.
So oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
I just had that one in my brain, humble brag. Flex, flex, flex. Okay, we should end the show now.
We should end the show right
for
now.
Myself.
Yes. Right mm-hmm. now.
Okay, goodbye. No, wait, that's it for the Hollowed Out Shell.
We should just stop one day. Record scratch.
Please join us tomorrow for Economics on Tap, the YouTube live and the YouTube live stream if I have any tequila left. 3:30 p.m. Pacific, 6:30 Eastern.
My goodness. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Ethan Peretz does everything. Ethan Phillips, not Ethan everything. Phillips, Erica Phillips writes our newsletter, also the Make Me Smart skills on your smart device. Did I record those this week, Erica? Slack me here while Molly's talking.
We didn't have to. Erica does all the things that Ethan doesn't do. Between the two of them, they pretty much run this operation.
Okay,
other than one Drew Jostad, who engineered this program, and when he hears the word goodbye, by God, he hits the music. Our theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez. The senior producer is Donna Tam. And the executive director of On Demand, consistently wondering why she lets us do this every day, is Santara Nieves.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.